Greetings, fellow traveler. As humanity awakens and evolves, we see change in every aspect of our lives. Let's consciously manifest our desires. I am Candace Craw Goldman, and this is New Earth Journey. Hello, and welcome, everyone. Today is September 15th, 2015, and this is episode number 5 of New Earth Journey Radio. I am so excited to welcome my very special guest this evening because, as I was telling her at the warm-up before the show, I have felt like this person, Alaya Dow, has been my friend in waiting, just waiting to be able to talk to her in real life and start this friendship that has already been alive and well in my own heart. Alaya is a sound healer, an energetic practitioner. She's a minister in the state of California, and she has lots of experience in many different alternative medicines, with oriental medicine and acupuncture. She's been an alternative healer for 20 years. She graduated from Lewis and Clark University in Portland, Oregon, and she has her master's degree in oriental medicine from the Southwest Acupuncture School in Santa Fe, New Mexico, a great place. She practiced in Telluride, Colorado for 7 years before moving to Santa Barbara, where she serves an international clientele as a spiritual guide and sound healer. Now, in 2001, Alaya had an enlightenment experience which enabled her to perceive other realms, hear the angelic beings, and increased her empathic and clairvoyant abilities. And I'm hoping to hear about that experience this evening. And today, she's here to talk to me about her brand new book, which was released just today, the 15th of September. And it's called The Seven Cups of Consciousness: Change Your Life by Connecting to the Higher Realms with New World. And it's with New World Library. And it's being released today. Welcome, Alaya.
Thank you so much. It's a treat and an honor to be here.
Well, first off, congratulations on your book. When the information came down that it was being published, I thought, this is your first book? I thought that you had already written this book. See, already wrote a book. You're already my friend. I mean, I'm already ahead of you somehow in the other realms.
We know each other from the future.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I actually did listen to you years ago on Coast to Coast. George Norrie had you on, and I heard you then, and I've been following you ever since then. And as coincidence may have it, I think you're warming up with me, and you're going to be talking to George tonight again, aren't you?
I am. History is repeating itself in a beautiful way. It's so cool.
Hey, it's better this time, because last time I was just listening.
That's right.
In a bedroom, I think, somewhere in Austin, Texas. And today I get to talk with you live on the air.
Beautiful.
Well, I definitely want to give you time to tell our audience a little bit about yourself, about your book and your awakening experience and your practice. But when you do, Alaya, I'd like to know, even before telling us, if you would, about your awakening experience, why do you think that happened to you? What was going on in your life or world, or how were you poised to have that happen to you?
The short, long story is that my soul has actually been really yearning for a higher level of awareness, awakening, for a long, 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 long time. And I think of our journeys not just as one life, but many lifetimes that make up this big, long experience. And so my memory goes back a little longer than just this life, and I have a recollection of studying and training and really focusing on my consciousness and being a more evolved being and serving humanity by modeling right energy for many, many lifetimes. So this is kind of a blooming experience, an expression of all of those intentions that I've held for so long.
So you actually have some memories of other lifetimes. May I ask when you first were aware of those or how they came through or?
Yeah, should we really go out of the box?
Absolutely. That's what this.
Here we go.
There's nobody listening to this show who isn't already firmly planted outside the box. So we don't have to start with the ABCs of this world at all. Lovely. I'm really interested in knowing, were you a little kid when some of this happened or what?
Further back than that. So when I had my enlightenment experience in 2001, I gained memory of what I'd actually been doing for the last 1800 years.
Oh, my.
And I prepped for this life for 1800 years. I guess you could say that I believe in preparation. And and part of that preparation was actually working on the other side, helping people prepare and debrief after their incarnations. And that was a really valuable time for me because I was able to understand why people did what they did, what it is what their soul was really intending on mastering, and then also why they set their lives up the way that they did. So that when I got here into this world, I had that whole background of essentially being an angelic therapist on the other side.
Oh my gosh.
So that's out of the box.
No wonder I have felt like you've been my friend for all these years. The work that I do with QHHT, which is Dolores Cannon's contribution to the whole understanding of what we used to call past life regression, but is just so much more. We often take our clients in their consciousness to that place. Normally, most of us call it the light council, where they're sitting with advisors and setting up their lives, thinking about what they want to accomplish and choosing different details about the life that they're getting ready to incarnate into. And you're telling me you were one of those people.
Yes. About 400 years was 300 to 400 years earth time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That is just so amazing. This cannot be our only show. I have, I think, 5,000 questions for you now. So, gosh, do you have then, for instance, specific memories even right now? Can you imagine or pull from your memory banks right now the idea of counseling somebody or participating as they were making these decisions?
Absolutely. And, gently advising. I mean, you always have to honor people's free will and choice when they're coming into the world or at the end of their life. The more conscious an individual is, the longer their debrief or the more thorough their debrief is going to be, not necessarily longer. Because if somebody's living a very, very conscious life, they're constantly assessing and reassessing, then they're actually not going to have a very long debrief at the end of their incarnation before their next journey or mission, whatever that might be, because they've already been debriefing the entire time. And so I actually make a practice in my own life that once a week or once a month, I do a little assessment. I imagine me being on the other side, sitting in council and reflecting upon how I'm behaving and where I'm headed and how would I feel if today was my last day, and then reflecting upon the life I've lived. So, that training is helping me now maintain a conscious, aware life so that the decisions that I'm making are really in alignment with my soul path.
That is so beautifully, beautifully said. And I feel like I've said something similar, but in a much more, clumsy way. I've sort of said, I just feel like my life's a movie because... And then I have that, I have kind of like the production crew is following me, and I will, just like you just said, imagine
you're on script.
Last day. Yeah.
Yeah. And, when we are more conscious, when we're holding more of awareness in our inner river of light, knowing that we are the divine being, we will prepare for incarnations more and more. And I kind of think of it as being on script and then following that script and recognizing that you wrote the script, that there isn't anybody creating your reality for you, which essentially puts you in a place of empowerment, no longer the victim, right? Where some other energy is controlling and creating your life. And so when we're on script, it's lovely because everything's been planned and prepped, but there is one tiny little aspect that does get lost. And that is, it's not as much of a mystery when you're on script. Mm-hmm. So you have to find excitement in a slightly different way, as opposed to, I have no idea what's going to happen. It's like, well, I already kind of feel what's going to happen. And all I have to do is keep showing up in the most beautiful present way that I possibly can.
You know, you said that so gently and delicately. I think we have to go down that road and ask a couple questions there, because you're right. I mean, some of what those in the metaphysical community have talked about is, you know, our connection was erased. We don't know. And that's what keeps things interesting. So how then do you keep things interesting if you know what's coming up?
You know, for me, I actually am constantly challenging myself. My greatest challenge is to experience a concept, an energy, a shift in consciousness in a higher realm. And then where I get intrigued and challenged, and it keeps me awake and alive, is, you know, alive in the work and in what I do, is how can I take what I just experienced in the higher realm, which was extraordinary, and bring it down here into the physical plane and share it with others in the clearest, least distorted way. Mm-hmm. So that is what kind of keeps me in this place of the mystery, the curiosity. How is this going to reflect from the higher realms into this one? And then I'm also have this creative current that flows within me, and I'm constantly doing creative projects in a myriad of ways.
Well, and there's another thing that you and I have in common. I have so many things going on creatively all at the same time. It's nice to hear. Actually, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what you call that, you know, the river of light. And you make a great point in your book and in other places that you talk about this light being on the front of the spine. And I find that really interesting. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, when I had my enlightenment experience, I had a very clear awareness that I am actually a light body being, and that my light is almost like a beam of light, and it flows on the front of the spine. And in that enlightenment moment, I could literally feel my body around me, but my body consciousness different than my soul consciousness of what I'm like when I'm not in a body. And I call this body like a nature spirit, a body deva. Mm-hmm. And so when I think of the soul essence, the rider in the body, I think of that as a river of light that flows up and down the front of the spine, ideally firmly attached to the front of the spine, which then creates healthy chakras, healthy energy centers, and then the body doesn't feel like it's being abandoned and rejected and left behind. Mm-hmm. And so when we hold our awareness on our saddle, front of spine, in the inner river, we then experience a sense of connection and peace and inner power and inner safety. And so a lot of the work that I do is focused on helping people bring themselves into that inner river of light and feel their essence, that part of them that is so perfect and whole and in a constant state of connection with the divine.
In your book, there was a place where you were speaking with a woman and you had her close her eyes and you were working with her. And she said normally when she closed her eyes, she didn't see anything but darkness. And when you were working with her, she suddenly saw light behind her eyes. Can you talk about that a little bit? And about perhaps I have other clients and people around me who talk about seeing flashes of light. So how does all of that connect?
Well, people can see flashes of light, and that might be that they're actually taking their awareness into a higher realm and seeing energy or consciousness or beings in those other realms. But in this particular instance that I wrote about, it was about guiding the woman and having her literally use her inhale to pull herself into her inner river of light. And then I also talk about, we all have like an energy self. I call it the higher self. And your energy self, higher self, has connection with your energy fields, and you can use your energy fields to actually pull your awareness into your divine line river of light. And so when her energy fields brought her awareness into that place, she actually saw it. And with her third eye, her eyes were closed, her third eye perceived her divine line for the first time in a conscious way.
Really beautiful. I wonder if you could describe it visually. Is this light brilliant white? Is it golden? Does it have colors? Can you talk about what it actually looks like to you?
You know, for me, when I work with people, I have found that they've reported to me that their rivers of light vary. So some people's divine lines have like a pink pastel hue. Some people has like a purple sparkle. So whatever you perceive, assuming it's absolutely beautiful, almost like you could cry because you're in such awe of your own inner beauty. Mm-hmm. However you perceive that is perfect. And to also understand that the only person that can really get in our own divine lines is ourselves. Mm-hmm. No one else can get in my divine line, and no one is going to see it the way that I do. So mm-hmm. even if somebody looks at me from the outside and they see my divine line, well, they're going to see something, but I'm going to see something different because I'm in it. And so I think the most important thing to realize is that however you perceive it is perfect and right for you, assuming it is positive and supportive. Some people that I've worked with, I've had them come into their divine line, but they keep seeing darkness. And I'm like, you haven't hit it yet. Keep going deeper. And they're like, but it's dark and gooey and icky colors. And I'm like, you're not in it yet. Keep pushing mm-hmm. through the mud. And so to realize that when we do truly get in there, it is gorgeous.
Alaya, do you think this has anything to do with a Kundalini experience? When people talk about Kundalini, are they talking about that light, or do you have any feelings about that?
Well, we'll have to back up just a little bit because that talks about the body and how I think the body is its own consciousness, kind of like you're mm-hmm. riding a horse or you're driving a car, you're not your horse. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, I see that the body also has its own divine line, river of light, that actually flows through the spinal cord. And I was at Duke University doing a master mediator course with my husband, and we went into the cadaver lab because we were researching neuroscience. And one of the scientists handed me a spinal cord and with my gloves on. And I'm wow. holding the spinal cord, and I almost went down on my knees with this huge surge of energy. And it wasn't that I was feeling the energy of the previous tenant, you know, or body deva, but my body deva said to me, my nature spirit, physical human form said, that is the divine line of the body deva. And I went, wow. Whoa. I mean, it was just like,
wow,
shivers through my entire body, because it was this awareness of, oh, the body has its own divine line too. And that's where the Kundalini energy will flow. But one of the Kundalini awakening activations that can happen is when the soul essence that is riding in the form becomes aware of their own light that's flowing on the front of the spine, and ideally firmly attaches to the front of the spine, kind of like a saddle, then it will activate the divine line of the body deva even more. And then you'll get more of a current of energy flowing in the divine line of the soul and in the divine line of the body deva.
That is so interesting. You know, I've talked with my own clients for many, many years about, of course, the same thing that you do about you're not your body. And what I've said and suggested to clients over the years is think of your body as a partner. You know, you can't be angry with it all the time. You can't be mad if it's not doing what you want. You have to think about it that way. But even just reading your new book, I have to thank you so much, because you once again brought another topic, and there have been several topics and phrases that you have introduced to me that have been key in my own practice that I've used with hundreds of clients throughout the years. And this one recent one has already helped a very special young man that I know in Texas. When I told him, I had just finished reading this paragraph when he called me, and he was mm-hmm. having some challenges with his body. And I said, you know what, I'm just reading this book about by Alaya Dow. And she says, your body, Deva, has its own higher self, not your higher self. Your higher self isn't completely in charge of the physicality of your body. Your body has its own higher self, and you can have your higher self and your body, Deva's higher self, communicate in a better way so that you can have a more comfortable life. And he went straight into a Reiki session, mm-hmm. and it was astounding. It was wow. The Reiki practitioner noticed. He noticed. His mother sent me a message and said it made a big difference. And I am now going to be able to talk about that with my own clients in my own sessions. And I just have to thank you so much for that, because it makes so much sense about who's responsible for what, and that we're coming into this planet and our bodies are part of this planet and they are part of nature. And there's a, you know, there's this dance and this companionship and this, and these contracts and this communication that we have to have. And we can't just lug around our body thinking it's us and being angry with it and, you know, demanding things from it when it needs to have respect as a separate thing. And it's just so beautiful in your book how you talk about that.
Yeah, I really treat it like we're riding a horse. And, you know, if we look at how we're in relationship with a lot of people, at least for myself, I've been training myself to be less codependent and more co-creative. And the most intimate relationship that I have beyond my husband and dog is the one that I have with my body, Deva. She is the closest thing that I have to, it is the most intimate relationship. And I have this little theory, I'm kind of tangenting here for just a moment, but in our intimate relationships with our partners or even friends, whatever issue we might have with our body deva or our body deva might have with us, it might manifest, materialize, and reflect onto our intimate relationships with our partners, because that is the closest intimate relationship we have going on inside ourselves. And so it's really about having the body be responsible for meeting its own needs as we, the soul riders, meet our own needs and our own divine lines. And then we're able to reflect this inner fullness out upon each other and have a really healthy co-creative ride instead of a codependent, resentful, martyrdom journey.
I also found it fascinating how you talked a little bit about being in different places. So your body, Deva, may be in a different place of evolvement than your spirit might be. And that's also so interesting to me.
Yeah, usually the body's a few steps behind in the process of evolution. Now, there are things that our body deva knows that we don't know, but there are things that we know that our body deva doesn't know. And I kind of call that the update. So from my perspective, and this might be different from what other people experience personally, but the nature spirit that we get every single life that we come here is the same. So I've ridden with my body deva in previous lives, when she was in different forms, different sex, masculine, feminine, maybe was a dolphin or a bear or a tiger or a dog or a cat. And we've gone through this whole process of growing and learning and evolving. And between lives on Earth, I will go and gather information and learn more things. And then when I come back into the body, I then give those updates to my body deva. And when we're not conscious of the experience and the relationship, it might take a whole lifetime to update our body deva on our most recent discoveries.
This is just so fascinating. And it makes me think about so many things like DNA. For example, I had a client not too long ago who came to me who had scoliosis. And of course, it ran in her family. Her mother had it, her daughter had it. And we found out she went to a past life in Ireland. And in the past life, she was being persecuted and, you know, her beliefs, etc. And when we got to the place where we talked to her higher self and we said, you know, what is the root cause of this spinal problem, this scoliosis. And her higher self said it was her family lineage, her ancestral DNA that was carrying the message of bending to the will of the Catholic Church.
Wow. Fascinating.
Isn't that interesting?
Absolutely.
So what you're saying is that the body deva, because it's the nature spirit, is maybe carrying that information between lives. Is that right?
Absolutely.
That's just so fascinating. I have to tell you, my whole body is buzzing like crazy. just vibrating, sitting in my chair. This is so amazing. So amazing to talk to you about all of this. I could talk to you all night long, and we're about halfway through the show already. I definitely want to mention more things about your book. And about how others can learn about some of these things by reading it. Can give us a little rundown about what your book actually is, and when people read it, what they can expect to take out of it.
The Seven Cups of Consciousness is a book that talks about seven concepts that can help explain why your life is the way it is and how to change it, not using the physical realm or your thought forms, but actually using the higher realms, your higher self, your body diva's higher self, and then what I talk about, the team. It's like your imaginary friends as children. And so we're tapping into these other dimensional resources to change our physical experience.
I see. And why seven? How did that come about?
You know, it actually came, I almost want to say 10 years ago. I had tracked down my husband. I was dating him in the higher realms and then found him in California, which was lovely. That's a whole nother story. And when I was getting on a plane, headed back to Telluride to see clients, he asked me, what are the concepts that you teach and that you use for yourself? I mean, because he met me and literally in 3 years, I had completely shifted my entire physical reality. I was living in a different place. I had started a new practice. And at 26,000 feet sitting on the plane, I just sat down, tuned into my guides. And I said, what are those concepts or those belief systems or principles that I use? And literally in 3 minutes, I wrote down seven sentences. Mm-hmm. And those seven sentences are still the seven concepts. Now, I've unpacked them and refined them over the years, but it essentially is these seven concepts that when we fully embody them, we, our body, our team, they actually are the template. I know this is a huge statement, but a template, a pathway, a process for becoming fully enlightened, full-on ascended master, when you take all seven of those and completely embody them on every aspect of your being.
So this is a real map for increasing our connection, refining our consciousness, and beginning that involvement and moving towards being an ascended master, which brings me to, I just have to tell you this, Alay. I read somewhere in some of your work, I can't remember where, but when I read the phrase, yourself from the future as an ascended master, I think I about fell off my chair. I thought it was such an amazing thing because with Dolores Cannon's work in quantum healing hypnosis, we go through time and space. We go into the past, we go into the future, we explore parallel realities. And I just, excuse me, loved that phrase, yourself from the future as an ascended master. So have you met yourself from the future as an ascended master? How did that come about? How is it that you accessed that phrase and talk about that term?
I have had that experience of seeing and feeling and connecting with myself from the future as an ascended master. And then also in my quest to meet my beloved, I would actually call upon myself 3 years in the future, 5 years in the future to mm-hmm. guide me in the now. So I started using that technique about 15 years ago. And then I want to say it was like 12 years ago, there was something I was really struggling with. And I waved a little red flag to myself in the future. So I was falling asleep and I would wave this little red flag to my future self, come help me shift this piece. And I mm-hmm. waved the red flag for maybe like three nights. And on the third night, this woman in the middle of the night appears in my bedroom, sits down on my bed. I can literally feel the weight of her. She has long white hair and she's taking her hands and she's moving them over my body. And I'm kind of energetically feeling what she's doing and totally blown away by the mastery. And I woke up in the morning and the issue was completely gone. And I had this insight. I was like, oh my God, that's me when I'm 80. And so I have this awareness that we can call upon our future self mm-hmm. when we're 80 or in a future incarnation or as an ascended master to help us. And then that actually helps us stay in our power more. We're not giving our power away to someone else.
Mm-hmm. That's just so fascinating and so amazing. I really love that. And so is yourself from the future as an ascended master, could that be one of the beings or the energies that you talk about when you talk about your team?
No, your team are actually beings that are not aspects of yourself. They're not fragments of you. They are individual souls, just like you're a soul and I'm a soul, and we're having two different experiences in this world. So our team actually encircles us in another dimension. Mm-hmm. They have their own personalities, their own way of being, their own belief systems, their own wisdom and mastery. And we are literally a group incarnating, spiritually growing and evolving together, using the group resources to navigate our experience. And so whenever I have a sort of a team member who speaks for the group, right? So it isn't like 15 voices all happening mm-hmm. at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I know when my team is speaking, because every time they say something, they always end whatever they're saying with a Canadian, eh? Good idea, eh? And I was like, oh, that's the team.
Now, that's just amazing. So let me understand this. When you were remembering the 1800 years of being in between incarnations, et cetera, were you part of a team then too, or was that something completely different?
My team was part of that training process, and I was the one that got voted to be in the middle, monkey in the middle.
Interesting. So can you describe a little bit more about what other kind of beings or et cetera can be on a team? Can they be people that you've known in other carnations? Can they be angels? Can they be spirit guides? I mean, how else would you describe who's on a team?
Yeah, they would definitely be spirit guides. They would be angelic guides, but your guides actually come and go. So depending on what it is you're needing, like if I'm going into a healing session, my healing guides might show up. Now, my team is going to be with me 24/7. Archangels will come and go. Ascended masters will come and go. You typically wouldn't want to have an ascended master on your team because your team is going to be at a similar level of consciousness that you are. If you have a team member who is way more evolved than you and the rest of the team, it's going to be a little boring for them. They're going to be a better guide to you and your team.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So throughout your book, as I was reading it, the thought occurred to me, you know, there's all these different ways and there's and you provide really incredible step-by-step instructions on how to access these higher realms and the team members and different strategies to help bring all of this knowledge and this help to you with, you know, to make positive changes in your life. And the thought occurred to me, I wondered, you know, why is it that we, meaning I guess our conscious minds, why is it that we are orchestrating any of this with like suggestions, you know, telling our higher self to talk to our body, Dave's higher self, et cetera? Is this an aspect of our free will being human beings, or how do you see the construction of this dynamic?
Right. So when we hold the awareness that we do have an energy self, what we're doing is we're recognizing that we are a multidimensional being. And so we're taking our awareness out of the physical realm and we're holding it on this higher floor. And whenever you hold your awareness outside the physical realm, like, okay, I'm going up to my higher self and I'm asking my higher self, energy self, to do something, to consciously connect with my body, Davis higher self, or to activate the vibration of self-love, or to infuse greater support into my resource grids, whatever it might be, you then amplify that energy in that higher realm. The physical dimension is a fabulous mechanism for making requests for the energy to shift in the higher realms. When you're on the other side, when you're just in the higher realms, not in a human body, you can't make the request to the degree that you can make them when you're here in this world. It's almost like when we're in the physical plane, we have access to the accelerator, the steering wheel, and we can make very detailed requests for the energy to shifting to greater coherence, and it happens in an exponential way, whereas it might take, 30 years to do it when you're on the other side, and you can never get that detail because you don't have the contrast.
That is so beautifully stated, and it really agrees with a lot of the discoveries that I have made and practitioners and colleagues of QHHT have made as well. You come here in the physical for exactly that reason. And so many people want to escape. They want to escape being physical because they think somehow leaving here and going to the other side and everything's going to be fine and they don't have to worry about anything anymore. And what we are understanding, because we're able sometimes to communicate with those parts of consciousness that are there, is that, wow, I really could have used my time a lot more valuably than what I did, more efficiently, and I kind of squandered some of my opportunities. And that makes so much sense, what you just said.
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell a funny story, short one.
Okay.
So because we're out of the box, I was driving from Santa Barbara up to my house in Clovis, and in my mind, I love to move furniture and remodel. And so I'm moving my office around in Clovis, and my guides encircle me while I'm driving, and they say, Alea, do you really want to remodel your Clovis office, or would you like to remodel your Sirian office on Sirius? Because I also have an office in Sirius, the planet, and because that's where I'm from. And they said, and so I said, oh my God, I totally forgot that I really want to remodel my Sirian office. So I put a rose crystal hot tub and like piles of gems and a beautiful river moat around it and a half wall of mist, and it's gorgeous, and a crystal table for the gathering. And I was so excited that I had done my higher dimensional remodel that I no longer felt the anxiety or the need to move my physical dimensional office around. It was enough. It was plenty. And so I think the urgency or the desire or the yearning to go back to the other side, well, that's actually an indicator that we really want to do the remodel over there while we're here. Make the appropriate request so that when you do get back to the real world, the other side, it is holding the vibration that you were wanting it to hold before you even left.
That's really fascinating. I'm so glad you told that story. What a great story. And I'm just imagining, like, what other things could you possibly have put in that office?
Oh, it's pretty magical now.
I bet. How amazing is that? So, So I'd like to know a couple other things. When you're talking in your book, you also talk about something you call a reference point. Can you explain that a little more fully to me? What a reference point is, how you discovered what one was, and how you use them in your life?
Yeah, reference point is, it's like an energetic nugget of what we want. So if I want fulfillment, and I think that the chocolate chip cookie is going to create the experience of fulfillment, I'm going to put my little energetic reference point for fulfillment on the chocolate chip cookie. Now, if I have my higher self, my energy fields, lift my reference points for fulfillment off of the chocolate chip cookie and back to my divine line, and I start looking for fulfillment in my inner river of light instead of on the chocolate chip cookie, I'm not going to go to the chocolate chip cookie for it. Just like when you think about your gas station, right? It's like, oh, I need fuel. The little yellow gauge, you know, that little yellow light that comes on in the car, that's a reference point, an indicator that we need to fill up. And so we have our reference points for filling our fuel tank up on gas stations. So then we go to the gas station to fill up. So anytime we do energy work on ourselves and we shift how we are perceiving, then we want to update our reference points and how we perceive reality and where we go to get our resources met.
Hmm. And so what shifts us off of a reference point? Do you know what I'm saying? If I were to right now shift my reference point off of a chocolate chip cookie and then not, I guess, feel the need to indulge in one, and then later I maybe feel that again, like I need a chocolate chip cookie to fill me up, what might have happened for me to have, reverted back? How does a reference point move like that?
Well, you'd then want to check your, and in truth, if I was being even more specific and detailed, the chocolate chip cookie is going to be for your body, Dave, and not for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a team member who really likes chocolate chip cookies from a previous incarnation when they were in the middle, you would get you, your body, and your team to all hold your reference points for fulfillment, safety, connection, whatever it might be, in the divine line of you, your body, Deva, and team appropriately. And I talk about the sacred trinity. And so whenever we're doing something and we're wanting to shift how we are perceiving or how we're reacting, we need to get it going on inside the soul essence, the body, and the team. In Christianity, they talk about the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. And I rephrase it, redefine it, and say higher self, body, Deva's higher self, team.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And so many of your meditations address a lot of these goals. And I think your book actually includes downloads for, is it 11? 11
meditations? Yeah, actually, it's 12, but I put 13 in there. So there's really 13 meditations that people can access when they go to the online link. And then I also have definitions and images of all of the terms that I use and a YouTube about how to surf the waves of emotion, because I talk about that with empathic sensitivity. And so there's a ton of resources where people can actually experience these concepts at an energetic level that really helps the mind then understand the concepts in a deeper way. From my perspective, when our higher self, our energy self, gets a concept, then our mind understands it. Mm-hmm. And I remember an 8-year-old telling me, Alea, when I listen to your meditations, it works better if I just don't listen. You know, it's like he feels it. And so, those audio meditations that are included in the book really can help people embody the concepts at a deeper level.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Very nice. How did you come to call your meditation Cups of Consciousness? Where did the cups come from?
Well, I was actually pondering that for about 8 months to a year after I had started the daily meditations. And so in 2009, actually a year before, I was getting emails and phone calls from clients saying, Alea, I'm really struggling right now. Can you do a little bit of distant work, or can we have a quick 5-10 minute conversation? Mm-hmm. And after about a year of getting these phone calls, probably 15 a week, I started thinking there has got to be another way that I can help people and support them and then teach them the tools so that they don't need me. And I was driving up from San Diego after a work weekend, and my guides encircled me and said, daily meditations. And I said, what? I need to meditate more? And they're like, no.
Not you.
Record daily meditations. And I was like, oh, okay. Because, you know, in my sessions, I do these energy protocols and I have these insights and I don't really write them down and I don't record them. And then they're gone. They're lost. And so the daily meditations are a place where I can capture the work that I'm doing and how my work is evolving and growing and going deeper. And they're just 7 to 10 minute audio meditations. And when I was walking on the Carpinteria Bluffs one day, really struggling with there's got to be a better name for these cups than, you know, or these meditations and daily meditations, because that's what they were called. And I was sipping my latte and I thought, they could be a small cup or a tall cup. Mm-hmm. And then I think I was walking with my mom and I think she said, what about cups? And I was like, yeah, but cups of what? And then we sort of stumbled upon, you know, Cups of Consciousness. So I get to give credit to her too.
Oh, way to go, Alea's mom. Excellent. Yeah.
So and, daily and tall cups of consciousness. And then now the 7 cups of consciousness. And I also do free conscious conversations and cups of conscious connection. So
very nice. And you're actually providing a free week of daily cups of consciousness for listeners to this program. They just have to go visit your website. Is that aleadao.com?
Yeah, they can go to aleadao.com. And we actually just put a new fresh look on Alea Dao, and we have dolphins swimming in the background. And people can also go to cupsofconsciousness.com and they can get a free trial week of the daily cups. And they can also get a free sample of the tall cups, which is an hour-long energy balancing session.
Very nice. Very nice. And you're actually starting like a book circle?
Yes. So anybody that purchases the book, it's included in the price. It doesn't cost anything extra. Mm-hmm. Starting October 22nd, I'm going to be doing a live and recorded online and over the phone book circle, where each book circle focuses on the concept. So the first one will focus on the first chapter, the first concept, and then the second one, so on and so forth. And there'll actually be 8 of them every 2 weeks. And it'll give people an opportunity to ask me questions and go deeper into it. And then, you know, for me to share a few more stories, because whenever you write a book, there is an editing process where mm-hmm. things get weeded out. And so mm-hmm. there were aspects that I wasn't able to share initially, and I want to share those in the book circle.
Very nice. So, and some of these things that hit the cutting room floor, were they like your Syrian connections and your out of the box stuff?
Not so much. It was sort of my odd sense of humor that got edited out.
I love your sense. I really do love your sense of humor. Well, what else would you like to tell us about your book? Is there anything that we major that we haven't covered yet?
Yeah, there is a piece, and it's a true gift, I think, with what the work that I do and that I wrote about in the book. And I have this desire, yearning to help people understand why they've created the challenges that they do. And I talk about it from the perspective that the more painful a challenging situation is, we want to recognize that our soul is really, really determined to attain a very particular vibration. And so when I see people who are really immersed in self-hatred or are really in a lot of financial struggle and debt and lack and fear, there is this level of courage that soul is holding. And they're like, I don't care what it takes. I am going to master this very particular vibration. And it's usually the opposite of the challenge. And I have this thing called the flip it section in the book, where whatever it is you're challenged by, think about the opposite or the solution. And recognize that that is what your soul is intending on mastering, but not by using an outer circumstance. That's just the trigger. And so when we start having our higher self, our body, Davis higher self, our team, hold the vibration or the quality of the solution in our divine lines, then the challenges start to go away. Mm-hmm. And then we start magnetically drawing to us and creating an inner reflection externally of our internal reality of I'm finding support in my divine line, or I'm finding trust or connection or empowerment or love in my divine line, nowhere else. And then the outer world starts reflecting that to us. And so I think a major piece in the book is helping people really have a formula for shifting their challenges into their greatest strengths.
And you've really kind of reframed the whole concept and idea of the law of attraction, you know, vibrating or, you know, focusing on or trying to imagine or create, you know, the opposite of what you want. You have to at least hold that idea. And you have very specific ways of helping people try, you know, to bring that into their lives and their world. Very specific how-tos, not just airy-fairy kind of, you know, suggestions, and people say, well, how do I do that?
Right. And it goes beyond the imagination. It's like, no, don't imagine it. Get your higher self, your body, Davis higher self, and your team to all hold that in a higher realm. Mm-hmm. Because the other concept that I speak about is that the physical dimension is actually a reflection of the higher dimensions. It's like a mm-hmm. surface of the mirror. And I talk about the pond, right, and the tree reflecting onto the surface of the water. And when we recognize that when we change the energy in the higher realms, it then reflects here into the physical plane. So we're not using the physical world to make any of the changes. Mm-hmm. We're getting our higher self, our body, Davis higher self, to do it. And I actually just did my first book signing the other day.
Congratulations.
It was so sweet. And people had such great questions. And mm-hmm. one of the questions really, you know, every time I talk about it and teach it, I go deeper into it. But it just made me really realize that when we want something, when we want to manifest something in the physical dimension, if we at the level of our higher self are holding it and our body and our team are not, it's not going to manifest. Mm-hmm. So if we get ourself, higher self, our body, Davis higher self, and our team to all hold it, that sacred trinity, then it starts manifesting in a much more powerful, accelerated way. And when we're holding our attachment, our desire and receiving it in that higher realm, that also creates the amplification reflection phenomenon into the physical plane.
As above, so below. You just did another great explanation of that adage. And it really makes me wonder so much about disease and, you know, some of the challenges that people have physically with their health and the different ways they may go about, you know, dealing with that. If they really can think about their body Deva and their body Deva's higher self in a different way. And this idea of contrast too, yes, that, you know, bringing in the contrast to really understand and really make achievements in your progression, you know, through this soul's experience. It's very interesting. May I ask you this, Alea? So much of your book is beautifully written as a self-help kind of book, you know, how you can help yourself. There's some ways that I've been looking at it sort of sideways as a healer, you know, how has concepts and terms and different ways to suggest to others. But I'm wondering if you've thought about that at all, how we can best be healers and help others achieve some of the peace and balance and wellness and happiness that, you know, I know that we can't impose it upon them, but as healers, we like to quote unquote hold the space and try to assist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how would you suggest that this book and some of the concepts in there, how could it help those who are taking that role as healer in this lifetime?
That is a beautiful question. And I actually went into meditation several years ago with that exact question. Mm-hmm. And being out of the box, Christ and Buddha showed up and they said, Alea, here's the deal. When you are attached and desiring only for your own reality and you're only responsible for your own energy, you, your body, and your team, and you are modeling the solution to the person you are sitting across, you are creating a strong, coherent field of transformation. Mm-hmm. The moment you get attached, desiring for another person's reality, whether it's positive or negative, usually it's never negative for me, and then you take responsibility for their process, and then you drop your energy fields of coherence from 100% to zero. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh my God. Mm-hmm. So when we are healers, we will empathically feel a lot of the times the challenge that the person is in. We'll emotionally feel it, or we might even physically feel it. That's giving us great information of what they're struggling with so that we know the solution. And so then what we want to do is we want to lift all of our attachment, our desire off of shifting, changing, healing that person, return all responsibility that we might be holding for healing them, shifting them, let them hold that responsibility at the level of their higher self. Mm-hmm. Anytime we empathically feel someone, it's because we have information for them. So we would invite our higher self, our body, Deva's higher self, our team to send that energetic information to them where they have the capacity to receive it. And then we pull all of our gifts, our wisdom, and our mastery that we were putting on them, trying to fix them, off of them and back on ourselves. And we are holding this gift, this wisdom, this mastery, the solution on ourselves, modeling it to them, creating this strong positive field of empathic transformation. And then we can hold the safest, most compassionate, loving space for them to be in whatever they need to be in. We don't want to shift them. We don't want to change them. We're not going to take responsibility for it. And the moment someone feels that safe space where they're not being judged, where they're not being fixed, where no one's taking responsibility for fixing them, they actually start connecting to their own healing source and bringing in their own solutions. Mm-hmm. So as a healer, we want to send information, model the energy, hold a safe, compassionate space for them to be in whatever they're in, and we will see amazing, miraculous transformations. So whatever you want for another person, do it only on yourself. Invite their team also to hold the solution inside themselves as they encircle the one in the middle. Invite their body to bring in their own solution for themselves. And then the soul usually shifts. But a lot of the times when we're healers, especially when the physical realm, we're working with a body Deva consciousness. So anytime we're working, we want to check and identify where it's coming from. Is it the soul, the body, or the team? And I actually created an empathic sensitivity deck to help people identify where those sensations or challenges or pathologies coming from.
Interesting. You have a deck of cards then.
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, you let's say you're feeling, you have a headache, mm-hmm. and you pull out your deck and you go, where's this headache coming from? And there's, I've come up with 19 possible different locations. And it'd be like, oh, this is coming from a biological parent, or this is coming from my partner, or this is coming from a child, or this is coming from a client. And then I also have little cards of fill in the blank. And so I think it was about 10 years ago, I was so overwhelmed by empathic sensitivity that I created this deck to help me navigate it.
So intuitively, that will help you by just choosing cards in that way. And people can purchase these cards from your website and help themselves in that way as well.
They are. It's definitely homegrown. You know, maybe at some point I will do a little bit more of a professional version. But yeah, people can get the empathic sensitivity deck, or they can just muscle test. In the book, I have mm-hmm. a list of all the possible locations, and then in the additional resources that are online, it also helps people learn how to deal with empathic sensitivity and walk them through the steps of clearing empathic sensations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people just don't realize that sometimes some of the strong feelings that they feel, or even thoughts that they have, really, really aren't even theirs. They're just sitting in the soup of them, and they're, you know, thinking that they might be theirs and that they're not. And I think you have some ways of discerning the difference between the two in your book. You talk about that in your book as well.
Absolutely. 70 to 80% of what we feel is not our own.
You know what? That is so important. Can you just say that again? I want you to say it again, like slower, that so people out there can hear that.
So my guides did a little experiment with me, and they said, Alea, we're going to do a little experiment with you, and you are going to feel the way that most people feel. So for 3 weeks, 70 to 80% of my experience was not my own. I was hearing other people's wow. thoughts, feeling other people's feelings. And my guide said, Alea, you've got really strong boundaries and really good discernment, and you let it in for a nanosecond and then you immediately clear it. But most people are living in this soup of empathic sensitivity, 70 to 80% of their reality, and they don't even know it.
That's just so amazing. So, and do you find that some of that has to do with location? I know I'm a country girl. I'm in rural Kansas right now. And sometimes when I'm in the big city, you know, I feel just kind of a little on edge. You know, I sleep much better out here in the sunflowers and pastures than when I do in the city. Does that mean that I'm also empathic and picking up the energy of the city, et cetera?
Absolutely. And we do have a house in the country. And at the end of our driveway, I created a sign that says, activate force fields, hold the vibration of safety inside. So whenever we leave, force fields up.
Oh, I absolutely love that. I absolutely love that. Well, we're coming down to the end of the show, and I just want to make sure that everybody has all the information that they have about your new book, including the, you're just like giving away some sort of prize if you go in and click on a link. And I know I've put it on my Facebook account, and I'll put it on my website as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. It's like $1,500. It's two sessions with me. It's $888 on my website of audio meditations and sessions. Cool. I think I have like 2,000 audio meditations on my website. Mm-hmm. So people can pull from that. And what else is it? There's a little iPod Nano that mm-hmm. I'm going to get people, get one person. So one person wins, and the drawing is December 1st. And they also get a year of daily cups and a year of tall cups. I think that is the prize. So, and then also,
wonderful.
If people purchase the 7 Cups of Consciousness book before September 20th, they will actually be able to receive a gift with purchase of a month of daily cups. Then they can give cups to people and then download an album of music.
Oh, how beautiful. And you've got several albums, don't you?
Yes, I have 5.
Alea, thank you so much. We are out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining me today on New Earth Journey. I'm so glad that we are finally talking, because you've been my friend forever. I know it. And I hope you join me again someday.
Absolutely. And it's a deep honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much. Until next time, all shall be well. Thanks for listening.